It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Well, we're back to back again since I'll be in Canada and don't have time to get another podcast.
I want some maple syrup bacon.
I'm not in that part of Canada, dude.
Oh, bummer.
That's in the other side of Canada.
I like that stuff.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Not good for your heart.
Oh, sorry. I didn't think it tasted great.
I made a doctor's appointment yesterday. I guess that's on my head now. Everything I eat, I'm going, oh, okay, I'm going to get yelled at for eating this, and I'm going to yell at for eating that. So
you're food policeman.
Time for a checkup with a brand new doctor. So I finally got my old one conditioned to the way I am, but now he's just too far away, so we got to get somebody closer. So we're going back and doing it.
There you go.
Heard from Melissa last week and thought we'd just read part of her letter. Melissa, thanks so much for writing. I love what she said in the first part of this. I've been listening to the podcast for a year now, and I look forward to hearing new one every week. There have been more than a few moments where my husband or myself will say, I heard something really great, interesting, intriguing on the podcast today, or I loved how they put such and such. And we'll launch into a great conversation where God gets to open a curtain or two or tear down another brick from the wall. Isn't that great?
That is. That's fantastic. That if that was our design, that I'm thrilled with. Because if we can provoke some people to think and grow and Jesus becomes central in their conversation,
yeah,
that's what's happening.
And I love hearing between husbands and wives. You got Rich and Margie that take it out on their Saturday drive and let us be part of that. But I love hearing that something we say or did got them on a whole nother conversation about things. And I just think it's a great way, great thing to have that fruit come from this thing. And I don't think either one of us envisioned it when we started this at all.
I can confidently say we didn't.
And they just said they sat down and watched the Church Outside the Walls from the Family Room Remedial Guys, or Family Room Media Guy. And she said just the clips of us sitting at the microphones talking. She said, I'm so thankful for you guys taking time out of your busy lives to sit down and converse every week and then going the extra mile to record them and then post them for the rest of us to share. They've been such a blessing. I'm extremely grateful for you two for it. I wrote her back. I said, you know what? I still think Brad and I have more fun doing this than anyone has listening
to
it. Yeah,
this is so, I get to come here and laugh for a couple hours.
I think even after we stop the podcast someday, we'll still just have the microphones here and you'll come by and we'll just talk. Otherwise, we don't seem to get together much. Man, life's kind of crazy. But he said, God tugged at our hearts gradually, yet suddenly it did seem last summer to leave the institution and begin walking with him in regular life. I know there are plenty of people who have lived life like this without the podcasts and books and websites, but I'm very grateful for God's timing in it, that he called us out at such a time as this where resources were available to us to help us learn and grow and walk with him more naturally. And now we're not alone, or I know we're not alone or altogether crazy, unless we all are.
A little bit crazy. I like a little bit crazy.
A whole lot of fun. I'm pretty adept at putting into writing what's on my heart and mind. But God has been working so much in me and freeing so much in me. There's no way I can accurately convey it all in an email. So y'all are just going to have to come hang out with us in South Carolina one of these days.
Woohoo!
And we keep getting, I tell you, I get so much email from, particularly from, I think it's Greensboro, South Carolina. I'm getting tons of email from there. I don't think those folks know each other, so it might be good to.
I'm about to declare.
Do friends and friends of friends.
Email bankruptcy. You mentioned it. I really
yeah,
think
you're
great.
There.
Yeah.
I'm caught up. This is not a good day to talk about. I'm all caught up pretty much, even
bummer.
After the.
I thought I'd get some sympathy here. I'm just
no,
looking.
You got my sympathy.
By the end of today, I'll be 100 behind.
So all of you waiting to hear back from Brad from the podcast?
It's not happening. I've declared bankruptcy. I love you all. Thank you for writing. Thank you for all that you do.
You might want to write
him
again.
I do mean it from the depths of my heart.
Well, Brad's busy shipping out, what, 1,000 or so Shaq books every week nowadays?
Oh, it's insane, yeah.
Crazy.
Rolling out into Barnes & Noble's nationwide.
Oh, Barnes & Noble's carrying it. Ingram will have it soon. Amazon's got it.
You know what's really fun about
But still order
this?
From Brad, because that's the best way to get it.
You know what's fun about all of this?
What's that?
Is that besides the whole, you know, business side of stuff, the conversations I'm having with people that have actually read it are mind-blowing. It is so fun to realize how God's taken this little thing, and man, is he touching people in ways that you just like, wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, the email we get about this book and how it's impacting people, and particularly people who have been in real tragic kinds of situations, and given them new hope and faith in this God of affection for them. It's been fun. Anyway, Melissa ends with this. She says, thanks for letting us eavesdrop every week. Well, it's not eavesdropping, I don't think, if we're letting them.
No, we're inviting them.
We're inviting
them. Inviting them into an ever-expanding conversation.
And I enjoy this walk with you, and the discussions we've had on this thing have been fun and fueling in my own life. And even just thinking about you coming over up the road gives me thinking about things that have been good for me to think about. So that's pretty cool. And today I want to introduce you to another one of my friends. Kent's been a guy on our forum a lot.
I know Kent. Well, at least from what he posts.
Yeah, you've seen him post some. Kent had an amazing transformation in his life a couple years ago, and I was kind of in the cheering section rooting for him through it. We had a lot of fun with that, and I was with him, gosh, quite a few months ago now in St. Louis, and so we recorded a bit of a conversation, because I think his story has some wonderful things in it that will encourage other people that are still in the middle of that chapter with all the pain, instead of it on the other side of it, where you're getting to live the fruit of it. So let's just a part of Kent's story, and then we'll come talk about it on the backside.
Great.
Well, I'm in St. Louis with Kent Burgess. Hi, Kent.
Hello, Wayne.
Kent and I, we've been friends for, goodness, how long?
12 years.
Has it been that long since we first met at a conference out here, and I've been in your home, gosh, I don't know how many times.
Half a dozen or so times.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes twice a year, sometimes once a year. But we just had a great friendship. But and when I first met you guys, you were, even 12 years ago, you guys were not attending a Sunday morning event of any kind. You guys had been kind of what you called out of the camp, I think, at the time,
right,
for a
correct.
While.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, that's been about 18 years now that we haven't been involved in that.
And what precipitated that for you guys, just very briefly? Just what kind of led
for
you guys
for myself to? And my wife. For me and my wife, it was really kind of an uneasy, something's not quite right, just really feeling the Lord just leading us onto something that He wanted us to do, and it was something we knew that was outside of what we'd always done before.
And you, some others that were kind of wrestling with that at the same time, right?
Yeah, we met some people at the same time. There ended up being about 8, 9, 10 families that we all walked out at the same time.
Yeah. And you had some community fellowship things for a while. You did some house stuff. You did some whatever for a time.
Yep.
And since I've known you, though, you've more been just on the journey of just a number of you who are interrelated, and you kind of share life with each other a lot, but no formal weekly meetings, nothing, no it between you, as we like to say, I guess.
Yeah, correct. I mean, yeah, we it was probably about a 6-year period we had. We all lived in, you know, similar, you know, close community with each other, and on and off did some regular things, and then really felt that thing was coming to an end, and we moved from there and moved into a different area. And yeah, from that point on, which has been about 10 years now, we haven't had anything regular at all going on, just friendships, dinner with friends and things like that.
Yep, and when I come over here, there's lots of people in and out of this house all the time, and
yeah.
I love that. I love just... It's how we live, and even your work situation. You work in a hair salon.
Yes.
And even a lot of fellowship, not only with the other staff, lots of believers there, but then your clients too. Lots of opportunity to share.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, not only in the salon with coworkers we've just got a great staff of people who are just hungry for God and doing it in different ways, and friendships with clients that have spilled out of even the salon just into friendships. Yeah.
And I've appreciated you and your family. Got a brother and sister-in-law that's pretty close and lives down the street, actually.
Across the street.
And just had great time with this whole family and group of friends and folks I'm in the area. But last year, I've appreciated your journey all along, but last year you kind of took what I guess from the outside might appear, you just took a big step forward. Does it feel like that to you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what started happened at the end of 05 and then carried on through, I mean, just majorly, intensely, this time last year was just absolutely flipped my life around.
Yeah, and it wasn't that you weren't growing on before and caring about some things with God, but what's changed for you internally now? How would you say you live differently today? Then let's maybe back up a couple of years. I mean, no less passionate or no more passionate for God, I guess, but seems to be a greater freedom in your life to walk this journey. Is that what feels for you?
Yeah, freedom would be one way. Just chilling out probably is another one. I mean, just I've always been really intense.
Really?
Yeah.
We've had some fun with that, obviously.
And I used to hide it under the term passion. And it was revealed to be drama other than passion. I had to deal with that one. But yeah, end of 05, I think, just came to a place of, I mean, my life was really good. Good business, lovely wife, good kids, things going well, but there was just something. I was exhausted. I was wore out. I just knew something was wrong. And I think I just started at that point, you know, just started crying out for God. And, you know, some shattered dream stuff were revealed. It's just my life at that point, and at 41 years old, just wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
Almost a midlife crisis thing.
Yeah, I think it probably was.
You're kind of getting past that where you think you're going to get to do new things. And
yeah. And it was around that time. I mean, we went through a real crisis upheaval with our first oldest daughter, you know, entering adolescence. She was 15 at the time.
Yeah. And everybody's had a 15-year-old, knows what that means. We have to get specific about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, through some of the influence of you on my life and different things, I mean, just the whole thing of grace, it just really started to grab me, probably especially around the beginning of 2000. And so there was about 5 years of God just dealing with me with that. And we came to a place with a child that just really, just it the train off the tracks, you know, not only for her, but what it affected, how it affected me. It was just train off the tracks is how I would describe it.
And I got to be part of that. He'd call me once or twice at some critical moments, and I probably wasn't the best counselor, would you say, at a time like that?
No, I think you were about as good as I'd ever had.
He yells at me for laughing at him, though. And he called me at times just in fits of rage. I mean, not so much rage, anger. Just
no, there was some of that, too.
Just lost and just no hope, and things are just absolutely colliding, and just the way you were expressing it, I just got tickled, and so it was kind of...
Yeah, it was funny for you.
Yeah, it was great fun for me. Yeah. Because there's also the sense that this was culminating some things I'd seen going on in your life. And I've watched people get into these crisis things, and when I hear the language and the questions that they're asking and the things that they're saying, I get to thinking, wow, this is very close to a breakthrough. This is not just, I'm going under and everything's lost, but you're saying things that make me say, wow, this is getting very close to some freedom that's been coming on for a long time.
Yeah, I think it was. And I think for me it was a little harder, or maybe a lot harder at that moment to see it. But I knew God was in the thing. And I think it was through a period of again, religious arrogance of thinking I had it much more together than everybody around me. And was crying out if just God would come and fix my wife and fix the kids, everything would be fine. And I was just shocked when he showed up and he didn't seem to be concerned about fixing anything about them.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, he just went to work on me like I had never, ever, ever experienced. And I think through that time of you know, the 16 years or so out that we had spent, you know, I came to a place when I came through it, looking back, going, man, I just felt like I leapfrogged so far forward in a short period of time. Because I came to a place of really feeling, you know, God was just saying, Kent, you got to let go of this. And me asking questions like, I mean, this isn't something I'm supposed to control. I you know, the whole thing of being a father,
the head
of the house, and that type of thing. It was something that I just felt like it was my job to control. And it was during that time, thanks to Wayne, that I saw the illusion that control is. And it wasn't just part of the control. It was all of it. I mean, every bit of it I came to realize was just an illusion. I'm not in control of any of this stuff. And I had wore myself out. And so I think in that process, I realized it was that trying to manage and control everything is what had wore me out. And I just felt God just saying, just let it go.
Let what go? What do you feel like you learned to let go of, or at least had the grace to let go of at that season?
I think one of the things that I look back on in this whole thing of reconsidering everything that I thought I knew, And one of those things was the head of the household. If the kids are running awry, it's my fault. I'm not being a good leader, you know, godly leader like I'm supposed to be. And I let so much of that go. And it was, I went through a period of almost have to change everything that I had done in my life up to that point. Because I knew God was calling me. It felt so much like an invitation out of something that I had lived, you know, my entire life into something else. And it was about a 3-4 month period that I went through where I felt like Jesus was saying, jump from the speeding train. And I saw so clearly where I had been and how I had proceeded with my life and where it had led me with my wife, with my kids, with my personal life. And I knew so clearly, you know, with the grace and mercy and stuff like that, that Jesus was really saying, I got something better. So I jumped. And my body hurled through the air pretty violently for about 3 months where I just didn't know. I didn't know where I was going to land, and yet I knew God was in the middle of it.
So by letting go, do you mean you just let everybody do what they wanted and just took kind of a couch potato approach to family life?
No, it probably wasn't that. I did go through a period where I look back. I joked around with my kids saying that I'd just become the yes man. They would ask me at times, before they even got the question out, I'd go, yeah, yeah. And it really wasn't that I was saying yes to everything. There were so many things, though, that I had been so shaped into thinking it was one way and I would say no. And during that period, I mean, it was so hard, but I knew I was going somewhere else with Christ. And the answers became yes to things that I would have said no to before. It was frightening. I mean, it was. During that period, it was frightening. And I got through it. Again, I was saying a minute ago, you know, just the whole thing of why did it seem like there was just this? I felt like I'd been drop-kicked.
Yeah.
Gently. This whole thing was so gentle. There wasn't any, you know, real condemning type stuff from Christ. It did feel like an invitation to something better. And yet, looking back, I thought, man, what had gone on? Have I just been sitting around for 18 years and not much happening? And it was during that period that I really, really heard the Lord speak and impress upon me, you know, that 18 years outside of having religion unwound in me had prepared me for this, I think, that moment in my daughter's life.
That's what I like about it. You know, a lot of people see these stories. You talk about there's some climactic change. There's a crisis point and a real point of freedom and letting go. And people think, gosh, why can't I have that moment?
Yeah.
But I look at it, and I've heard you talk about it this way, too, just like you did. This is culminates something that's been going on for 18
for
years.
A long time,
of God
yeah.
just stripping your need to be in power. And we were talking about it on the phone, and I'd say things like, you know, maybe you just need to let this go, see this differently. There was a readiness to hear that God had already prepared.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, oh, I had a crisis, now I'm better.
Mm-hmm.
It was the crisis allowed some things to emerge.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you made some decisions during that time with your kids that, looking back, you would never in your right mind have made.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, I think it wasn't just, well, I just stopped doing everything.
Yeah.
You stopped leading in a pressure-filled, I'm going to fight your fire with my fire, and really learn, I think, to become. So would you say you're less the head of the home today than you were 2 years ago?
It's just different. It's really different. I know my wife and kids like this me a whole lot better than the me prior this event, and so I think it's just I approach this whole. It's changed how I approach my children, my wife, and it really has become more a servant thing.
Which to me is more of what the head of the home really means.
Absolutely.
The head of the home is kind of a misnomer because you feel like you get to be president of the United States and, you know, bang your gavel and tell people this, you're in charge, shut up and come along with me. When really you get down to how do I serve what God's doing in the lives of the people I love, and that's not always what we would first think to do.
Yeah.
Particularly, I think a lot of my head of the home in my more religious years, it was really about my comfort and my security
Right.
and ordering the home in a way that made me happy, rather than being the servant to my children or my wife to help them become who God. And I've just, as an outsider living in your home a number of times over the years, I think even more so what Jesus really meant, I don't think he even uses the term head of the home, but really more of what leadership is, which I'm serving what he's doing.
Yeah.
Rather than forcing it on everybody else.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think so much of what I was doing even before this happened was in a way about my wife. I love my wife. I love my kids. And there was that element. But I think through that thing, I really started realizing I was being put out by so much of the things that they were doing. And so there was a part of me, a biggest part, probably at the core of it, was I wanted all of that to shape up so it didn't cost me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now you're willing to, you know, be part of the cost.
Yeah, absolutely.
The whole thing Jesus said about didn't come to be served, came to serve. And he was putting that in the very context of leadership.
Yeah.
So what do you like about the Kent you live with now? You talked about lessons, hands.
Yeah, I think, again, a book you've talked about so many times over the past.
Well, I let you, you know, it's one of the things we were working on, and I just felt like it was important probably for what you were going through to have a look at the book. So I did send you a pre-copy of The Shack.
Yeah, this I got to read The Shack last year in the midst of some of this. And I think, you know, there were so many things about the book that just really just rattled my cage in such a, again, such a gentle way. I've never, I think, read anything that challenged me in stuff that was in such a gentle way, and yet it flipped things around. One of the things you were saying that's changed in me, this whole thing, when I first read it, it just annoyed me, and yet I knew there was something in it, and it was the living with expectancy instead of living with expectations. I'd live my entire life with expectations.
About God.
Of God, what I wanted it out of my life, what I wanted my wife to do, what I wanted my children to do, basically what I wanted everybody to do. And I let that's one of the things I let go. And I wrestled with that thing for a few weeks, going, man, I know there's something to that. And I thought it was a cute play on words. And I stuck with it. And through that, I came through that realizing, man, it's just there's a huge difference between living with expectations and living with expectancy of what God's going
to
do.
And this has opened up, just, I know we've got to get to the end of this thing, but this has opened up. I think people who've watched you on the forum, you're a frequent participator in the God Journey Forum, but have seen that this, not only is this freed up some things about family life, but this also has just kind of opened up a whole new vein of hunger and growth spiritually in the things that you're reading and looking at, you know, life issues and political issues and how we live in the world.
I began to reconsider everything. I mean, everything. And the thing that was so cool about it is I think there was a trust that had grown in me, in my growing knowledge of God's love for me, that allowed me to risk all of the things I'd been so certain about. And I'd realized enough that so many of the things I'd been certain about had been proven to have been wrong. And so I just saying, God, I'm going to trust you with all of this stuff. And I let so much of that stuff go and started opening myself up to things that were so opposite of what I had lived believing before, and was just so amazed how God expanded in my life during that period. Things I'd been warned to stay away from through my religious upbringing, I walked out into, and it created this space in me for trusting God to grow beyond what I ever dreamed of.
So greater uncertainty in the day-to-day of your life,
but trust,
but greater freedom and trust that God's in it and sorting things out. Any regrets? We love asking. Any regrets about getting this place in your life?
Or? Oh, no. Yeah. No. No, you always say, man, I wish this had happened years ago.
But yeah, me too.
Yeah, I've given that up too. God's in control of this thing, and I'm learning to get out of the way. The sooner I get out of the way of trying to make these things happen, it seems they happen.
You know, the whole proverbial let go and let God, I mean, I don't always love cliches, but that's a through line when you look at what Kent was talking about. I don't know why it's such a challenge for us to kind of downshift from all the, I think, self-imposed concepts of responsibility that I've got to do this role, I got to play that function. And when you realize, you know what, I can't, and maybe I'm not supposed to.
Yeah, but I, in the midst of tragedy and pain, and somebody comes along and says, let go and let God.
Oh, no, yeah, that thing comes off so trite. But
that's when I want to start slapping people. Because I think what's really by is, it is true. In the end of it all, the more we try to force something, the less of God's life and glory we're going to see in that circumstance. I think that's just true.
Yeah.
But what I loved about his story, and this, I've known Kent probably for a decade or more now, met him in a trip at St. Louis a number of years ago, and then been in his home a number of times, and I've watched him on this journey. I think one of the things that you hear through the story is his ability to let go in this crisis grew out of this relationship of trust that's been going on the last 8, 9, 10 years. And I think that's the ways that God works. We don't just let go because we're all good enough to let go. It's that God has to be bigger than what we're grabbing onto in our own effort. And for many of us, I think in moments of tragedy, he's just not. We've not learned a God that's big enough to pick me up if I let go. And we're thinking if I don't keep trying to make this happen, God's not going to.
Well, one of the things I was thinking about while I was listening to, you know, you guys talk, the whole, like, head of the household role, the responsibility and the rearing of children, it's like, yeah, you know, fathers and mothers, they're very involved in that process. God-given function to be involved. But if we assume that that means that I then am, in some measure, giving the dictates of what goes on, you know, like, this is the way you got to do it, and I've got to somehow get them to respect and follow me and my directives. You know, the unfortunate thing is, even if they do, at the end of the day, you've got some people who are going to then have to relate to you for that function, as opposed to nurturing them being able to relate to God for that function.
Yeah. And have you noticed the more we demand respect from people,
the less you get it, the less you have it.
If you're in a position of having to demand respect, you're in trouble. I think what Kent underlines here, and I wish we had time for a whole podcast on it. I think it really needs it. It's the sense of moving from institutional power. When we talk about the family as an institution, the father's a head of household, we've really set up the whole corporate play for what we're trying to do at home and think, well, I have the power to compel action, so doggone, I'm going to compel action. And how that does become counterproductive, particularly as you have teens, young teens and aging teens, the whole idea of, because I'm the dad, that's why.
It doesn't work.
It just doesn't carry weight. Even if you can get the outward conformity for a season, you're breeding an inner contempt that will come and bite you in the rear end in the long haul. And so I love the whole idea of switching, the idea of what some call right-handed power, which is institutional, right to enforce, I'm the dad, that's why, to left-handed power, which is the power that comes from loving and serving. It's the influence you gain in a life because someone knows you love them.
Yeah.
And when you watch Jesus through the Gospels, all you see is left-handed power. If anybody had enough right-handed power to just do what I say, or I'm going to blast you into 1,000 little bits of dirt, Jesus could have done that. I mean, he could. Jesus came and said, I'm going to love people and serve them into life. I'm going to let love win what compulsion can never win.
See, that's how a heart gets captured. And if at the end of the day, the heart doesn't get captured or transformed, you don't have anything that's going to last or endure. Next crisis, it's out of there.
Yeah, it's just external stuff. And yeah, you may have the right to boss people around, or people are so afraid of you that they'll go along with you for a season. But to confuse that with real authority and real power is the mistake the world makes over and over again. It's a mistake we've made in terms of our institutional arrangement of the body of Christ, that who's got the right to power and command and follow and all that structural garbage. To really, how do we love and serve in a way that gives us influence in people's lives, not because we have the right to boss them around, but because we've loved them at their most broken and most hurting, and we've demonstrated to them that our love for them is greater than our desire to control them.
You know, it's been an incredibly illuminating insight for me is to sort of step back, and especially just in the context of family, to step back and recognize that God is far more passionate in love and in his commitment to my kids, to my wife, than I am. And he is desiring to grow them and lead them. And if I can sit back and that is present in my mind and my thoughts, then I don't get the weight and the burden of what this, you know, big responsibility. I sit back and I go like, Lord, what are you doing in their lives? How do I partner in with the initiative you're taking? The situations that my kids are in, various and different. Lord, what are you doing in this? And how can I help them come to you for the help that they need? I certainly want to be there for them.
Right.
But as they grow up, I'm not always, it's not going to be possible for me to ever always be there. I don't want their security to be found in me.
Yep.
They'll get some of it, but I want it to be anchored in their ability to always access him. And if you can start to look at that differently, you know, the head of the household, or you know what, you'll still do all the wonderful blessing side that is thought of behind those roles, but you won't do it from that right-handed position dynamic. You really can do it from that left-handed reality of, you know what, it's God who is first and foremost at work to accomplish all these things. I'm just part of his bigger process.
Yeah, and with the left-handed power, you're actually not only helping them in a better way, you're putting the relationship first. So not only do you help them, but the relationship remains intact. When you use right-handed power, you're always trading relationship for compulsion. Yeah. One of the most amazing decisions that this family made going through this real crisis, and the details just don't need to be public, but they made a choice to do something in the face of a crisis and a failure that was the opposite of what anybody I know would choose to do. Instead of punishing something that needed to be punished, they did something to preserve their family that to an outsider would say, you just rewarded bad behavior. You just rewarded it. The fact is that moment of doing something wonderful for a family and letting their children get through this difficult period was a great demonstration of grace in the face of failure. And it would just, it'd be impossible to explain to somebody looking from the outside going, you did what? But it was what God asked them to do. And it re-won a family back to each other and back to themselves and help their daughters recapture a sense of simplicity and family again. And it's just hilarious because it was almost like, you know, you see those football players in the Super Bowl say, what are you going to do now that you won the Super Bowl? I'm going to Disney World. That's what they did. They went to Disney World together. And as a family, they recaptured their sense of being a family. I'm not saying the prescription for your family crisis is to go to Disney.
Next failure, take a party.
The beauty was they had a sense that that's what Jesus wanted. And if you knew Kent, you would know that would never have been his idea. You can almost tell when it's a Jesus idea because you're going, nope, not the Kent I know. No, that's not his. It wouldn't be mine. It wouldn't be my resolve to a situation like that. But it was a lovely moment of letting grace triumph over failure and renewing relationship instead of executing rules that would have broken the relationship further.
When people and relationships kind of are supreme as far as a focus, and rules and program and policy, they simply become servants to that, then you have the capacity to sort of fine-tune what's growing and what you need to do. If you downshift for whatever reason, efficiency or for you know, I want to be consistent. Whenever you elevate rules and priorities and program over the individual and the context in which it's applied, you can start to whole skew that thing where the person realizes, oh, that's more important than I am.
Yeah.
And when that little switch gets changed, you're losing that heart. And it's not that you try to pander to that, but it's like, you know what? If at the end of the day it's love that transforms us, the only way I'm going to be able to be effective as a piece in that process that God's doing is if I really have access to that person in a genuine dialogue.
Yeah, I had a guy write me one time. His daughter was at college dating somebody he didn't approve of, and he wasn't going to let her come home for Christmas because that would be to support her rebellion. So he forbids his daughter, who's away at college, to come home from for Christmas because she's dating someone he hasn't approved of, and her rebellion will spread to the other kids. And when I talked to him on the phone, I wrote him, we had an email exchange about it, I said, you know what, you're going to wonder why in the long run she thinks that guy loves her more than you do. Because you're willing to risk the relationship to enforce your will instead of being honest with our kids, about things we think might be harmful to them, but at the same time putting the relationship first. That I asked him, I said, did you not ever read Romeo and Juliet? This is how you really screw up kids' lives when you try and force things on them that you haven't won in other areas of your life. And the other thing I want to underscore about this, I know we're running a little bit late here, but what I want to underscore about this is, Kent went through an amazing transition through this crisis. He did. Now, it doesn't mean people all say, gosh, I need a big crisis to get through this. I hope what you heard in Kent was 10, 12 years of being on this journey, of hearing about grace, of wanting a greater freedom than he could see, at times feeling like things were dead or not happening in the way. To say, well, it waited till this crisis, it's just to not understand the ways in which Father works. I think the whole 10, 12 years and beyond, Father's inviting Kent into this letting go, life of freedom, of grace, of trust bigger than your own effort, of power that isn't based on your institutional control, but is in the freedom of loving and serving those closest to you. And it took a crisis precipitated the lessons that have been going on for a long time. I think the hardest thing for people to do is be patient. It's God who is at work in you to will and to do of his good pleasure. You may not be where you want to be today. You may see further down the road than you get to live and I want that transformation too. God is at work in you to transform that. And let it play out as it's got to play out. There's things God needs to rewire and shape in you that'll lead to other things that God does that will lead to other things God does. So don't have the impatience of, I want to get there today. We all want to. But you know what? Let God, in his time and in his way, take you through what you need to go through to learn what you need to learn.
Yeah, and if we're always responding to the impatient impulse that I've got to do something, what you rob yourself of is the growth and trust of being able to look and genuinely see God's hand at work in this situation other than your own. And it's like that to me has been the fruit of just being, it's not like praising inaction. I'm not talking about that, but it's like in moments where it's like, gosh, my insecure impulses, I got to do something to fix this. As opposed to now, I'm more like, all right, Lord, I'm going to just lift this situation to you and say, help. I'm not exactly sure. Here's my impulse. I only want to do that if that really seems like something you're asking of me. Because otherwise, I want to leave space for God to step into this where everyone knows.
And that's the challenge. Whether we're going to save ourselves, which Jesus warned us about, or we're going to let him save us. And that's the challenge. And the growth, I think what Kent's life says and his recent experience is, this is where growth really, really happens. When you can let Father do his working and you've grown to trust him enough to get there, rather than, I'm going to fix this thing the best way I know how and hope that's good enough. Because it just isn't good enough.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.